राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। थैंक यू वेरी मच। आई विल बी स्टार्टिंग विद द जय राधा माधव प्रेयर्स, देन वील टॉक अबाउट द थीसिस फॉर द टॉक टुडे, एंड देन आई विल गिव सम एग्जाम्पल्स। वी हैव अ रेफरेंस फ्रॉम द भगवद गीता एंड सम क्यू एंड ए एंड सम काइंड ऑफ एंड ऑफ ईयर रिफ्लेक्शन, बिकॉज दिस इज द लास्ट संडे ऑफ द ईयर, 52nd संडे ऑफ द ईयर, नो मोर संडेज इन 2025, एंड सो दैट्स what's going to come now. Okay, we'll start with the Jai Radha Madhav prayers. Please repeat after me.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jan Vallabh Giri Vardhari. जयो राधा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे।
Hare Krishna. Okay, nice background effect, thank you. Okay, there we go. Hare Krishna. I was just realizing that sitting on the Vyasasana here at the temple sometimes feels like how Arjuna would have felt in the battlefield. He's in the battlefield, and there's everyone, and he's about to fight, and he freezes. And sometimes I feel that, am I forgetting what I'm supposed to speak? Am I forgetting? And I'm going to do what Arjuna did. I'm going to offer my heartfelt prayers to Srila Prabhupada, and deepest gratitude to Prabhupada for establishing the Hare Krishna movement, for establishing these communities, for giving us the wisdom, for giving us these deities, and for giving us a purpose to life, that all of us can find time on a Sunday evening during the holidays to come together and to partake in spiritual activities. So my heartfelt gratitude to Srila Prabhupada. I would also like to express my heartfelt gratitude to my spiritual teacher for his support and encouragement to be able to be of service and to plug in to the vast community that Srila Prabhupada has provided to us. And my heartfelt gratitude to the leadership and management of this amazing new Ramanrithi temple. I was reflecting this morning that how often we come on Sunday evenings, we are here, we take prasad, suddenly after at some point, 6:30, we'll go there and prasadam would appear out of nowhere. And then it would disappear. And then in the morning, we leave this place with trash, with plates, and in the morning we come and the whole place is clean, pristine. And some of those people who are in the kitchen will be here again at 4:30 in the morning tomorrow. How does this organism of this temple just work and devotees show up? So I just want to appreciate that how beautifully functioning community and temple this is, that everything just seems to happen and one feast comes and another feast comes. So thank you very much. My heartfelt gratitude to the leadership and management and to this community itself. Okay, so what do I want to talk about today? Well, the topic of this class that I've titled is When Life Forces You to See, or When Life Forces Me to See. We can all ask for ourselves. Now, what do I mean by that? Reflecting on this year, well, actually, you know what? I'm gonna start with somewhere else. How many of you are glad that 2025 is over? Could I see some raise of hands? Only one person. Okay. Well, how many of you are thinking that where did the year go? Yeah. What are the rest of you thinking then? Just another day, another Sunday. Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Well, just think to yourself that did this year teach you something that you didn't want to learn? Did this year bring up something for you that you didn't want to see or that you were forced to see? If the answer is yes, this class is for you. And if the answer is no, then this class is definitely for you. Yeah. When I started this year, it taught me a lesson that I also didn't want to learn. I didn't want to face that lesson, and yet I was forced to learn. So some background context. Last year, around this time, I was in San Francisco. That's where I was living for many years. I was working at a very high product tech company that was making waves in the world. We were doing some really creative stuff. Books were written about the kind of work we were doing, and there was a sense and purpose to my life that I felt that this is the work I'm meant to do. I'm doing cutting edge work. I've made it. Growing up in India, I've come to Silicon Valley. This is great. The underlying truth underneath all of that success that looked like from the outside was severe burnout. Burnout to such an extent that my mental health was struggling, my relationships were struggling, my physical health was struggling, and yet somehow I convinced myself that life is great. I get this high paycheck, I have this beautiful apartment overlooking the bay, I can see I'm so high up. But deep down, something was there, and yet I was conveniently avoiding it. Only to find out earlier this year that the same company that I felt so proud of to work for laid me off, made my role redundant, in other words, fired me, along with hundreds of other people. And overnight, the idea of success, the idea of identity, the idea of what I thought is meaningful, is valuable for me shifted and changed overnight. It's a lesson that I didn't want to see, but it's a lesson that was imposed on me. So here's the lesson number one from today, if you want to take note or remember. The most important lessons in our life are rarely chosen. They appear. We don't choose them. They appear. For instance, our dear protagonist, Arjuna, didn't choose that I'm going to go on the battlefield and I'm going to have a breakdown. I'm going to have a breakdown that even God will see. No. He thought he's doing his thing. He thought he's doing, fulfilling his purpose, and there it is. Yeah. the burnout, the tiredness, the pain, the suffering that was underlying what was there, suddenly it came to the surface because of that layoff, that reduction. And suddenly I was faced with the reality that I was conveniently avoiding. The question I asked myself, what am I pretending not to know? And the question I ask you all, what are you pretending not to know about this year? Yeah. What comfortable illusion did 2025 take away from you? What was it? Suffering? Death? Disease? Changes in material circumstances? What was it? Something to remember. Because it's a very natural human experience that we all go through. So now, obviously, I decided to leave the Bay Area, leave all the things that were taking away my life, and decided to scale down, to focus on spiritual life, to finally force myself to see what is really important in my life. I traveled to India. I spent time in an ashram. I decided to come to this community where I can finally focus on my spiritual life more than where life was taking me or where I was taking life. Yeah. And a big lesson, big takeaway for me from that experience was that don't wait for crisis to examine your life. Sometimes it may be too late. The questions that we are avoiding is what life will eventually force us to see. So if I may just start to see them right now, a little bit, one step at a time. The person who coined the term that started my journey in understanding what burnout is, the person that coined the term burnout, his name is Herbert Freudenberger. And he described it as people who lose the sense of optimism, passion for life, and sense of purpose. And he said that his clients, he was a psychotherapist, defined them as that they were not lazy. They were very high achievers. They were people who are doing things. And he defined that this burnout often masks an existential exhaustion, which is a crisis of meaning, which is undiscovered, which is something that we continue to live with without actually going into it. That why am I here? What's my purpose? And we conveniently mask it with realities of life that I have my work, I have my family, I have my kids. And yet this underlying existential exhaustion remains. And you know what? To answer that existential exhaustion is really the reason our founder Acharya, who is sitting right there, appeared. How many of you are visiting a Hare Krishna temple for the first time today? Welcome. Welcome. How many of you are visiting ISKCON Alachua for the first time today, having been to other temples? Welcome. Welcome all. These communities were established by our founder Acharya and his dear disciples. And if you see the writings of Srila Prabhupada, all of his writings are meant to serve that existential exhaustion that we feel by giving us a sense of purpose, by reminding us who we are, by bringing us back to the understanding of what our actual nature is. And that's the answer to the question of when I feel burnt out, when I feel that way, where do I go? This has a name. I was reflecting earlier today that if we go to a specific place, for instance, you go to Walmart, there's a purpose behind Walmart. You go, you buy your groceries, you buy your stuff, and you come out. That's really what Walmart exists for. If I go there to do something else, for instance, to learn how to code, to learn how to do something, it's not the right place for it. When Walmart was started by the Walton family in Bentonville, Arkansas, back in the 50s, I believe, there was a purpose for it. It had a purpose and it existed. How many of you have been to IKEA? I know there's not one in Gainesville and people feel the pain for it. IKEA, there is a purpose it was established for, to buy furniture, to see how furniture would look. Now, if somebody goes to an IKEA store and forgets why they are there, and they look at all these beautiful setup rooms, and they think that, oh, this is such a great place to live. I have a beautiful kitchen, there's a bathroom, there's so many options for beds and bedrooms. I'm just going to live here. And he invites other people that, hey, guys, come, let's live here. And then suddenly everyone is living there, and they have their community, they form their friendships, they form their relationships, until IKEA calls in police and they kick you out. This is not what this place is for. Even though it looks like a home, it's made to feel like a home, it is not a home. And IKEA has a purpose behind its existence when its Swedish founder started IKEA. So I was thinking that similarly, when we come into this world, we take on a certain identity. Prabhupada calls it skin disease. We take on a certain identity. We think that I'm Indian, I'm American, I'm male, I'm female. I'm from here, I'm from there, I'm a liberal, I'm a conservative, I support the Gators, I don't support the Gators. No more comments on that. We take on these identities, and when we appear in the world, then we start to arrange the reality, just like in an IKEA showroom, that this is going to be my home, this is going to be my space, and here are my friends. Until such a point where the cops come and they tell us to go out. It's done. And suddenly everything that I thought was my identity is taken away. When I have to leave this world, leave everything that I know. Every single thing that we think are our own, our possessions, we have to leave one day. They will remain here. So then the question comes that just like IKEA has a purpose, and if I go to their website or Walmart's website, I can understand their mission, vision, and purpose. Does this world have a manual, an intentionality, a mission, vision statement? Well, guess what? Turns out it does. It does. And that manual is called the Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna... How many of you have heard of the Bhagavad Gita? How many of you have not heard of the Bhagavad Gita? Good. How many of you have read the Gita? How many of you have read parts of it? How many of you have it but haven't? One day I'll get to it. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, the speaker, and Arjuna, the listener in that conversation, gives a reason for why he creates the world. He points out exactly what this world is about, what kind of energies it is comprised of, and what are we supposed to do? He talks about the idea of what our duty is in this world. He talks about what we should be focusing on, what we should be avoiding, what are our growth areas. And yet, despite that, we conveniently forget it, and then we start making IKEA our home. Until something happens in our life, and it brings back that reality. And that's what I mean by when life forces us to see. That what are those moments in our life when it makes us question that, what is my reality? Am I doing this wrong? And in those moments, that existential exhaustion that we feel in those moments, the answer to that existential exhaustion is the Bhagavad Gita. So we're going to transition into the Gita. If anyone who is operating, could we display Bhagavad Gita 2.7? Is it possible today? In the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, there is a verse that I feel that is extremely relevant to what we are talking about. It's the verse goes, you can please repeat after me. Karpanya dosho sapahat swabhava. Prichhami tvam dharma samudha chetaha. Yachreyasya nishchitan bruhitan me. Shishyashasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. Let's try again, now that Prabhu has put the verse. first line. Prabhu, could you scroll up a little bit?
Karpanya dosha pahata swabhava. Prichhami tvam dharma samudha chetaha. Yachreyasya nishchitam bruhi tanme. Shishyasteham sadhimam tvam prapannam.
Okay, what does it mean? The translation. Now I'm confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me clearly what is best for me. Now I'm your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. I'm not going to read the purport. It's one of the most brilliant purports that I've read by Prabhupada. So if anyone wants to note it and read it tonight, Prabhupada actually calls in the purport that this is a very important verse. He says it's almost like a turning point in life. He says that nature's own way, the complete system is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step there is perplexity, and therefore it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can provide proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. So let's break down what Prabhupada is saying here and what he means by perplexity, and I don't mean the AI tool. Okay, so the verse starts with the word karpanya dosha. Does anyone know what it means? What karpanya dosha means? What does dosha mean? Weakness, not something you have with samba, right? Dosha. Dosha means weakness or a fault, right? And karpanya means because of miserliness. So let's call it the flaw of miserliness, okay? The flaw of miserliness, that it's a flaw. Now, if you think that miser, the word miser is associated with money. No. It means something else. What Prabhupada talks about is that a miser isn't someone who lacks money. A miser is someone who has money but doesn't know how to utilize it. He hoards it. So Prabhupada says the kripanas or miserly persons waste their time in being overly affectionate for family, society, country, in the material conception of life. One is often attached to family life on the basis of skin disease. So the question is, how are we misers in our life? When Arjuna is saying that I have this miserly weakness, I have this flaw of miserliness, what he's saying is that, where am I not giving my 100%? I have the energy, I have the resources, I have the capacity, and yet I'm withholding it. And that is miserliness. Or spiritual miserliness. Where am I keeping things to myself and not utilizing it? I, as a spirit soul, I have a capacity for transcendence, and yet I'm utilizing 10% of it just for the material problems and sufferings that I'm dealing with. Can I come back to my 100% capacity for transcendence? That's what this verse means. That's what he's talking about. What else does he say in the next line? Upahata swabhava, right? That means that Arjuna says that my nature as a warrior, upahata, means that it's completely overwhelmed. He's saying that I am a warrior, yet my nature is completely overwhelmed. So the question is, how is our nature today? Overwhelmed in this world when life brings us suffering. What is my nature? And what does that overwhelm look like for me? Is my true nature suppressed by the problems and the challenges that are happening in my life? He says, dharma samuddha chetaha. He says that I'm completely lost about dharma. I just don't know what to do in my life. What is my path? What is my purpose? What is my duty? Arjuna knows ethics, scriptures. He has all the frameworks, yet he's unable to see that what do I do with all this? Where do I go with this? And so then he asks, Shishyashateham shadimam pram prapannam. Therefore, because I have all the resources and intelligence, I don't know how to use them. My nature is utterly confused. I'm just so confused about what I need to do. And I'm so bewildered about my duty that now I'm asking you, you tell me, what should I do? Now I surrender unto you. So Prabhupada writes at this point that Arjuna stops the friendly nature of their conversation and he accepts Krishna as a master, as a teacher. And the question for us is, are we treating a relationship with Krishna as a friendly exchange? That I come to your house sometimes in the temple, you come to my house sometimes, I offer you something, you offer me something, and that's a good enough relationship. When would it become serious that I cannot figure this out on my own? When life forces us to see suffering and trouble, am I still trying to figure it out on my own, or do I come to that point that I cannot figure this out? Help me. It's the difference between browsing on Amazon versus pressing buy. It's the difference between this is interesting versus I need this. So when life forces us to see things that we don't want to see, can I come to that point where I can genuinely ask for guidance? That means humbling my ego, humbling my sense of identity, and asking. And you may say that, who do I go to guidance for? Well, for starters, we have books by Srila Prabhupada. That's an excellent starting point to read, but to read with the understanding that I need this to get out of my situation right now. So the takeaway here is, am I in friendly talk mode with divine, that Krishna, we are bros, we're connected, or am I really serious? Yeah. And what would it look like for all of you to stop that friendly talk and to start a serious discipleship? What would change when suffering hits in your life? This was Arjuna's forced to see moment. Arjuna gives all kinds of arguments in the first chapter of the Gita. At this point, he tells Krishna, my arguments don't work anymore. Arjuna was so capable that he could argue from both sides why I should fight the war and why I shouldn't fight the war. He gives the arguments for why I shouldn't. And at this point, he's saying that my arguments don't work anymore, Krishna. I need guidance. His breakdown at this moment became his breakthrough. So when we experience breakdown in our life, are we getting to the point where I can ask for that guidance to get to the breakthrough? Going back to my own story earlier this year, after the layoff, I was already planning to be in India. I planned to visit some ashrams, and my goal was that once my India trip is done, I'm going to go back to San Francisco, I'm going to get back to my job, I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to try to manage my spiritual life, try to manage my material life, try to manage my mental health, my relationships. And guess what? The first day I landed in India, my phone burst, and I got the dreaded email that your position is eliminated, you have 1 hour to collect all your download, any documents you need, you're done. And the moment I landed in India, Krishna forced me to see something that I didn't want to see. That now that sense of identity I was creating for myself is gone. And now I have to deal with the mental health. Now I have to deal with the relationship challenges I was facing. Now I have to deal with all the areas I was avoiding ownership in life. And life forced me to see. And what did I do at that point? I cried, I freaked out, I tried to contact lawyers. That can they do that while I'm on a break? Is it possible? I did all kinds of arguments that were possible that I could give. No, it's not fair. I contacted all the people. A true breakdown I felt. Only to come to a point that none of this would work. Let me just go to an ashram. Let me surrender. And I went to the Govardhan Eco Village. Has anyone been here to the Govardhan Eco Village? Yeah. Right to the shelter of Radha Madan Mohan. And I said, I don't know. And I took 2 months off. And in those 2 months, focused on the areas of life that needed help. But before I got to that point, it took so much trauma and suffering and fighting and scratching and the breakdown that I needed to get through. I was thinking of other examples that as I was going through this experience, that what are some other examples? I know Arjuna's example, but what are other examples of people who have experienced it? And a few came to my mind that I would like to share, and one nugget we can learn from that, and then we'll tie it all together and bring it to conclusion, of course. Steve Jobs. You must have all have heard of Steve Jobs. Anyone know what he was known for? Apple. Steve Jobs started Apple. But did you know that he was fired from Apple in 1995 when Steve Jobs was running Apple, the company he founded? He hired, I forgot his name, from PepsiCo to run the company, to scale it, and the guy comes and fires Steve Jobs from his own company. And he was thinking that, he literally said it in a speech, he said that, how could I get fired from my own company? How does that work? This is, and that too in a publicly humiliating manner. The identity of being a CEO, being a founder is gone. It's devastating in one experience. And over the years, he mentioned that you can only make sense of life looking back, not looking forward. You can only connect the dots looking back. So now that I look back from my life 1 year ago, I see that, oh wow, I see that a divine hand was at play in the moment I didn't realize. And he created Pixar, he created Next, only to be brought back into Apple. And he said that my biggest failure became my biggest freedom. Identity loss isn't destruction. So when you feel identity loss in your life with whatever that's going on, it might be actually preventing you from your real work. Might be preventing you from the real work of spiritual practice, which is what I was forced to do when I was in Govardhan Eco Village, to force myself to focus on my spiritual life, which I conveniently avoided in the name of doing my duty. What heaviness of success might you need to release to find the lightness of being a beginner again? What does it mean? The other example that I want to bring up is of Alfred Nobel. Has anyone heard of Alfred Nobel? Nobel Prize. When his brother died, they published an obituary in his name. They thought he passed away. And he woke up one morning, he opens the newspaper, and he sees his own obituary written by the newspaper. Alfred Nobel, 32, passed away, made dynamite. And he read it and he realized that, is this what I really want to leave behind? Imagine reading your own obituary in the morning and seeing your own legacy as death and destruction is something so horrible. It was at that moment it hit him that this is not the legacy that I need to leave behind. I must change course. And he started the Nobel Peace Prize and all his initiatives of honoring scientists. And now he's not remembered for dynamite, although he is the creator of dynamite. So the question is this, coming back to our year end, it's our chance to read our own obituary. If you were to write your own obituary of how this whole year went, or how your life has been going so far, what would you write? And will that summary make sense to you? That this is what I'm proud of? Or is this a time for us to change course? We have 2026 ahead, many, many more years ahead. Maybe, maybe not, we don't know. But thinking about it, that what would my obituary say right now? And is that okay? Am I okay with it? From our own tradition, I'm excited about one example, which is of Raghunath Das Goswami. Oh. All these examples are the examples of people who are forced to see something that they didn't want to see. Steve Jobs was forced to see that the company that he tied his identity to was not his identity. Nobel was forced to see that the course of my life I'm leading, being blind to it, is actually not how I want to leave my contribution behind in the world. Arjuna, he was forced to see that all my arguments, all my conception of this world is not where I want the world to go. It's not how I want to be. This, it's so disgusting, Krishna. I don't want to be in this situation. And he was forced to see, to face the reality, to understand that as a spiritual being, he has to perform his dharma, his duty. Raghunath Das Goswami, young boy, personally got benedictions and blessings from Lord Chaitanya, wanted to run away. His father placed guards around him so that he couldn't run away. And when he finally sees Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, I'm yours, I'm ready to surrender. And Mahaprabhu says, go back to your family. Do your worldly duties. There will be a time that will come. And so even when he was chasing spiritual life at the cost of his material duties, Mahaprabhu said, have some patience. The time will come for you. So he was forced to see premature renunciation isn't wisdom. Timing and guidance matters. So what's my point with all these things as we come to the closure of this class? There are moments in life that we will all face, that we all will face or we have already faced, which we didn't want to see, which we didn't want to learn from, which we are avoiding, which are existing underlying our life, and I don't want to look there, I don't want to see. And life, Krishna, universe, karma, circumstances, whatever you want to call it, the natural principles are such that they will bubble it to life. They will bring it to our attention, whether we like it or not. So it behooves us to proactively start looking into those areas. What am I pretending not to know? What am I avoiding that's making me uncomfortable, but I'm not going to talk about it? What's happening in my relationship that I don't want to address? What's happening with my relationship with my money? What about my spiritual life that I'm not willing to see? This being the last Sunday of the year, I really wanted to bring it for us to all to think about and see if we can derive any inspiration from it for our next year, which is going to come soon, in a few days. And if we become complacent, time will pass by and another day would come and another year. And very soon it could be December 28, 2026. And we would be like, oh, just another year went by. Versus, can I create life with some intentionality and some purpose? So to conclude, Prabhupada writes that perplexities of life will come by its own nature. He says, just like the forest fire appears and nobody is asking for it, and it comes. Right now, Southern California is going through terrible rains, crazy floods. Nobody asked for it, and we suddenly have to face life. So these calamities would come up in our lives. Can I be prepared and intentional and create my life by design, by the guidebook that has been given to me to understand the world, to know that this is how the world works by Krishna, to understand the true purpose of this world? And can I lead my life through that example? I'm going to close this with one mantra that we all chant. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama. It's the mantra of opening our eyes. That's what the mantra means. My eyes are closed. My eyes are closed in deep darkness. Darkness of what? What is darkness? Is it literal darkness? No. It's the absence of knowledge, the absence of wisdom. It's shut. That I am thinking the temporary to be permanent. I am thinking that all of my identity is my job, my high-paying salary, my apartment, my whatever. That's me. That's the darkness. Jnananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam. That now somebody has come in my life who is allowing me to open my eyes. It's the verse about, mantra about opening my eyes. And when that somebody, that spiritual teacher, Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama, when that spiritual wisdom through a person appears in my life, then I can see the world for what it is. So to conclude, how would you like to open your eyes in the new year that's coming? If you can reflect about one word, one way, and seeing what shifts might await you on the other side. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions, then I'm happy to take some questions. We have, I think, 10 more minutes for Q&A or thoughts, comments, corrections. Yes, please. Could anyone send the mic? The microphone is coming your way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. I remember going to India when I was 32. I'm 72 now, and also searching. And I remember everywhere I went, there was this phrase, Namaste. And coming back to the United States at age 32, when I was trying to decide what to do with my life and what I would be doing, and what stayed with me is that we really need to bow to the divine essence in one another. And if we, as a culture, as a community, could just bear witness to our brothers and sisters, especially the ones in pain, if we could stay with Hare Krishna, stay with the love, while we're holding presence for people in pain, the energy will shift and people will return. So for me, the message is to do our inner work. You know, like you said, we all have to face what we have to face to come to terms with what is love. And if we get the chance to be in love with our Creator and creation, and we get to be in that divine essence, then we need to hold that 100% no matter what's going on around us. And then all the traumas will start to dissolve. They'll dissolve because it's 100% commitment to the divine. If it's 99%, something's going to come in. It has to be 100% commitment. And then we can transmute the darkness in ourselves and each other. And I just thank you so much for your truth and your honesty and your authenticity and bearing your vulnerability here. It was deeply appreciated.
Thank you very much. There's a question there.
Thank you so much for your lecture. It was, really insightful and clear and inspiring. I just wondered if you have any personal practices that you share as going into the new year to whatever you want to hold on to and bring about and be serious about how to, like, keep that alive. Because I know a lot of people struggle with, like, keeping the practice or keeping what you intended to do. So if you have any personal practices that you share to...
Yeah. Thank you for asking. One personal practice, and I'm in no position to advocate because I also struggle with personal practices, and there are high highs of certain days, certain times in life, and there are lows where I dissociate. Last night, I was... it was a little stressful day for me, and sometimes with that anxiety, when I go to bed, it just permeates into the sleep and into the rest. And so a process of reflection, just asking at the end of the day that, what did I discover today? What was it? What's weighing me down? And writing about it really helps. And as I was reflecting about it, it's a practice that acharyas in our traditions did. How did we get Chaitanya Charitamrita, how did we get all these incredible texts? Because Murari Gupta, because Ramananda Roy, they took diaries, they took notes, they did journaling. They did such regular journaling of what am I discovering about my time with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here. And it's those kadachas which are called, which became essentially a text that we revel today. But what they are personal reflections. So one practice that I want to commit fully, more fully, that has worked for me and that I would love to share is some sort of daily reflection. Some sort of, these days we have AI tools available. You could open up Claude, ChatGPT, Perplexity, Google's Notebook LM, and you can at the end of the day just dictate a voice note that this is how I felt today. And as you keep adding it, very soon you can ask, what did I discover in the last week? And then it will give you insights of the areas that you need to focus upon. There's a methodology in management called Six Sigma. And the methodology operates with the fundamental principle that what gets measured gets improved. How am I measuring my life? It could be reflection. It could be a little habit tracker. It could be a sadhana chart. A lot of devotees I've seen use a chart that, did I do my 5 pages of reading? Did I do that? Did I do my chanting? Did I do whatever markers that are there for your life that you feel that bring you to that level of, I feel confident in my spiritual practice and in my life. And being able to go back to it, whether it's written or whether it's drawing, whether it's just drawing my day, whether it's visual journaling, guided journaling, bullet journaling, there are so many ways. We are really flooded by tools, but some sort of reflection that I can look back would be whatever works for you. You're going on a walk and you can just record a voice note on your phone. You can just go back to good old journaling. And then keep going at that on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. So then we have markers of life that this is where I am at. For instance, in a map, we have a point A and point B. That's how we can go from there. So unless we know where we are, we cannot. So what my goal would be at the end of 2026? Imagine it's December 28, 2026. Imagine. And if you look back to the year in the past, how would you want to feel at the end of that year? That was a successful year. I grew. I grew in this area of life. I faced something really difficult. I had that tough conversation with my mom that I've been avoiding. Whatever that is for you, see if you can gather courage to get to that point and constantly reflecting back. So that's one answer that comes up for me. Hope that helps. Yeah. Okay. Any final question? Yes.
I have one question. Thanks for the transparent about lay of those things. My question is, how you overcome from the breakdown, the situation where you was feel like lost, and then you come out. That is the spiritual way will help you to get over that, and the things what you have followed for the maintaining the consistency in your path.
Sure. You're asking, how do I get out of the breakdown? The first principle is, I need to know that I'm having a breakdown. That's the first principle. When we ask that, what's the first lesson of the Gita? People say, oh, you're not your body. The first lesson of the Gita is feel your feelings. The first lesson of Gita is Arjuna saying that my mouth is drying up. My senses are going away. I don't know what to do. My body is shivering. Arjuna is recognizing his own breakdown. Do I have the capacity to recognize my own breakdown? Krishna tells that surrender unto me, right? That's the ultimate lesson of the Gita. A lot of speakers talk about it. What chapter does Krishna give that instruction? Which one? 18th chapter. Krishna doesn't say surrender unto me on the first chapter. It takes Arjuna through whole process and journey of emotions and feeling and purpose and duty and my identity and my relationships and the highest principle and the nature of the world to come to the conclusion that surrender unto me. But before that, there's a whole journey. So the breakdown to breakthrough journey is not a journey of spiritual bypass that, Prabhu, just surrender unto Krishna. Even Krishna is not advocating that. Krishna is taking Arjuna through a whole process that recognize Arjuna, what's coming. Let's start with the absolute basic of understanding as a spiritual being. Then let's understand what duty means for you. And he's building up a framework. He's building this whole process through that conversation to the conclusion that Arjuna realizes that, all right, Krishna, I got it. Let me fight. And then what happens after fighting? A few days later, Arjuna's kid dies, grandson dies, the five kids of Pandavas dies. And Arjuna is immediately faced with the challenges that now it's time to apply the knowledge. Surrender is not a one-time process. So my answer to you is understanding what does breakdown look like for me. I was avoiding my breakdown when I was going through it last year, when Krishna really dropped the ball and was like, okay, this is the breakdown. But do we have to get to the point of personal crisis, or can we recognize it beforehand? So recognizing my breakdown, then asking for spiritual guidance. Shishyashateham shadi mam tvam prapannam. Finding either the text, finding some person, that this person, I ask you for shelter. That's the principle of going to a guru, shiksha guru, diksha guru, pad pradarshak guru, that help me. And then applying it gradually, following my spiritual practice, and then it comes to the point that the breakdown becomes breakthrough, but that breakthrough is a consciousness, because then more breakdowns will come in life, and I have that capacity that I can face these. Thank you very much for your question.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
We'll move into the next part. So prasadam is being served right now, so please make your way to prasadam. Hare Krishna, and Happy New Year to everyone.